is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey Hoopheads, check out the Triple Threat sales event this September from our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. They're offering $3,000 off their All-Star Plus machine, $1,000 off their Dr. Dish Home machine, and $100 off their IC3. Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Brent Tipton from the Porsche Basketball Academy in Germany, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
3R Basketball, powered by Under Armour, is coming to Cleveland this fall. Get your 3-on-3 team together and register at ua3rbasketball.com.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And last week we talked some Eastern Conference over-unders. Tonight we're going to talk some Western Conference over-unders. But since we last spoke, there was really two big news stories. One we're going to save for when we talk about the Phoenix Suns over-under. But the other big news story, unfortunately, was Ime Udoka and the...
My under is looking good, Mike.
Yes. You picked, and the under has also, Vegas betting line for the Celtics has also dropped from 55.5 to 53.5. So yes, your under is looking
good. I want to be clear here. I picked the under last week. My students, who apparently don't listen to the podcast clearly enough, Mike, told me that I picked the over, and I did not go back and listen, but I was like, I don't think that's right, because
if it was a video podcast, I could hold up the paper. I'm holding it up in front of the microphone now, showing that you, in fact, did select the Celtics under, and I selected the Celtics over, which that's not looking good, especially with Rob Williams' injury and this whole Udoka situation. It's, man, what a different position the Celtics are in, even from a week or two ago, where they looked in, and then you go back a month and you figure they just had signed Gallinari. Not that Gallinari is going to be a guy that's going to push them over the top to get them a title, but he's certainly a guy that's valuable to them in the regular season that they're now not going to have. And clearly this whole coaching situation.
Well, I mean, did you see the stuff at the, like, Jaylen Brown was like, I completely caught off guard and didn't know any of this was going on. I don't know if I've seen a timeline for this whole thing, but like, it seems odd how it kind of just fell out of the sky here.
What must have happened. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, if I'm the Celtics, like, this had to have been rather abrupt, right? Like, they just found out about it. Like, that has to be the case. Because if I'm the Celtics, the last thing I want is right when media days are starting and camp is starting that this drops. That's just my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong, but.
Well, I think two things. I think one, that it didn't happen. It's not like they discovered it at the end of the season last year and just thought they could push it under the rug and let it go. I think it was something that they discovered 6 weeks ago or 8 weeks ago or whatever it is. And then because of whatever the sensitive nature of this thing is or isn't, then they wanted to conduct a thorough investigation and do whatever their due diligence to make sure that
they were understanding exactly what went on. And so once they found out, then they went through that process. And then as soon as that process was done, then that's when they started to put it out publicly. And again, they've been very, very, very vague as to exactly what has gone on. And I know you've seen, and I've certainly seen, the debates going back and forth about what the Celtics should or shouldn't share with the public and what all of us have a right to know or not a right to know. And there's a lot of issues going on in terms of power structure within an organization. And it just, there's a whole lot of messy things that are tied up in this whole, whether it's a consensual affair or not a consensual affair, and how does that power structure play into it? And I think the bottom line is the fact that clearly, given a choice, the Celtics would prefer to have Ime Udoka back as their coach. And the fact that they've determined that whatever this was worthy of having him suspended for a year. I know there's been all sorts of rumors and people talking about, this is what it might be, or this is what it is. And I know there was a whole Matt Barnes video that he became privy to some of the details and said it's even worse or uglier than he even would have thought. So who knows? I mean, I don't want to sit here and speculate, and neither do you, but it feels like whatever this is, that it's a pretty serious transgression, and it was something that did kind of hit them out of the blue, or something that they discovered fairly recently and then had to go through the whole legal, I guess, investigation and have lawyers look into it and figure out what exactly was going on. And then they made their decision. And clearly this has an impact on people's lives, which is the most important thing ultimately. But for the purposes of the Hoopets podcast, clearly not having Ime Udoka as the Boston Celtics coach and having the turmoil that goes along with what looked like a pretty stable situation a month ago to what the Celtics are looking at now. And really, it's kind of interesting because when you think about the history of this particular iteration of the Celtics, so we're talking about the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown Celtics, you have the series against LeBron and the Cavs back in, what, 2018, when those guys were super young and they're in the conference finals and they almost make it to the NBA finals, if not for a really poor performance in Game 7 and an unbelievable LeBron game. Maybe Boston and this group makes it to the NBA Finals in 2018. Then they kind of fall off the rails with the whole Kyrie situation, and it looks like they just can't quite put it together. Even midway through last season, they were all goofed up and didn't look like they really had anything going. And then all of a sudden, things just turned, and they became a defensive juggernaut. And it looked like they were poised to win an NBA title last year. The Warriors end up getting them in the finals, but certainly coming into this year, a lot of people thought that they were going to be the favorites to come out of the East and that they were right there at the upper echelon of title contenders. And I think now you have to wonder, does this group have the resiliency? You have the whole Jaylen Brown being in trade rumors with Durant, and there's a lot of questions to be answered on this team. And so I would
almost
say
Danny Ainge was the GM of this team again.
Yeah, almost, right? I'll leave it here. And then you can jump in with anything else you want to say. But I think your under is looking pretty solid at this point.
I'm going to take that, Mike. After my track record from last season, I'm picking the Lakers. I'm just going to take any positive comments that we can take right now, and I'll settle with that. So on that note, I don't know. Do we want to – there's one other thing to the Eastern Conference. Do you want to address it real quick? Do you want to address it?
Sure.
Dean Wade. 3-year contract extension. Congrats, Dean Wade. You saw that, right?
I said that to you. It's a good signing. It's a good signing.
18 million, 3 years. He could be our starting small forward. You never know.
He very well could be. When you look at what he brings to the table from a shooting standpoint, I think the question is, what do you need most out of that position? That's a question that J.B. Bickerstaff and the Cavs are going to have to answer over the course of the first quarter of the season, is what is most important in that fifth starting spot. Do you want a guy who's more offensive minded with more size? So you're talking about Dean Wade. Do you need a guy who's more defensive minded that brings that to the table. And then you're talking about Okoro. Is there somebody else that you could plug in there that makes more sense? I don't know the answer. Does Caris LeVert make sense from an offensive standpoint compared to Dean Wade? I think it's going to be one of those three guys that's going to end up filling that fifth spot in the rotation or fifth spot in the starting lineup. And I think you're just going to end up trying out all those guys or trying out different lineups and see what works and what doesn't. And ultimately, I think it'll end up being one of those three guys that fills that fifth starting position.
Yep. All right, we'll see what happens. But good move for the Cavs, I think. And we'll see. All right. We're going to go to the Western Conference, Mike. And we have some other news stories that we are going to discuss as we're talking about these teams. Some of the teams we're not going to spend a long time on because we know, for example, we're going to spend some time talking about the Phoenix stuff. We're going to spend some time talking about the Pelicans. Pelicans have a few things to discuss. So some of the teams we might be a little bit lighter on. Other teams we'll spend a little more time on. All right. So the Dallas Mavericks are the first Western Conference team. We're going to go alphabetically again. The Dallas Mavericks gained the point god himself, JaVale McGee. They got, via trade, Christian Wood. They lost Sterling Brown, Jalen Brunson, Trey Burke, Marquise Chris, and Boban. Oh, that's so sad. Boban, no longer a Dallas Maverick. The Dallas Mavericks over-under Dallas Mavericks 48.5. Ooh. I think, I don't know, like Brunson was an important piece of that team last year when Luka went out, and it's going to be interesting to see, but they seemed like with Dinwiddie last year and the adjustments they made, 48.5 is a lot though. I'm going to go slightly under, Mike, because Luka will likely come in out of shape, even though he just played in the Euro. He'll going to come out of shape. Because he's been smoking his cigars and drinking his drinks.
He's only
and,
come on, man! He just finished that thing like a week and a half ago. So
listen.
I don't know how far out of shape he can get. That's a heck of a party if he's gonna party his way out of shape,
Luka,
in 2 weeks.
That's it. Luka. I'm not saying, is Luka, I'm not Luka's saying, AI? I don't know. With all this stuff.
I'm not saying he can't do it, but it seems unlikely. Look, I guess I'm gonna go with the over, and I'll give you my reasoning. So one is I just think that this season, it's going to be a Luka tour de force. I do think that losing Jalen Brunson hurts the Mavs. Christian Wood, although this is a theoretical Christian Wood, is a really good fit on Dallas. Christian Wood really hasn't ever contributed to meaningful winning basketball when he was with Detroit. Yeah, when he was with Detroit, terrible teams. When he was with Houston last year, a terrible team. And I think there's a reason why teams aren't that excited to have a guy with his level of talent around. I don't know what exactly those reasons are, but I'm not that excited about the Christian Wood thing. But you do get back Tim Hardaway Jr., who, look, he's not a star player. He's certainly not the second fiddle to Luka, but he's a guy who is a serviceable wing, a guy who's going to contribute to that team. And I do think that Dinwiddie is going to be better one more year removed from his knee surgery. Gives you that second ball handler. Is he as good as Jalen Brunson? Probably not. But can he be a reasonable facsimile of Brunson? I think so. And when you're betting on Dallas or betting against Dallas, you're basically looking at betting on or against Luka. And I think 48.5, the Western Conference at the top is pretty loaded. But I think there's going to be, just like we talked about in the East, I think there's going to be a bunch of teams here that are going to finish right around that 50-win mark, give or take. And so I'm going to go ahead and say Mavericks over, betting on a transcendent Luka season where I don't know if he's going to be in the MVP category necessarily, because I don't know that Dallas is going to win enough. They probably have to finish one or two in the Western Conference unless he just has an unbelievable stat line. But I do think that Dallas is going to go over 48.5.
Yeah. Hey, I heard something on a podcast about Dallas that I didn't even realize. Did you realize Mark Cuban's 64 years old? Jeez, I know that is crazy. When I heard that, I was like, Mark Cuban, 64.
Well, but okay. I think he bought the Mavs in like maybe 2000. So figure that's 22 years ago. He was 42. He was really young at the time when you think about it to be an NBA owner. And now 22 years later, here we are, 64 years old. But yeah, he does not seem like a guy.
January 4th, 2000, he bought the Mavericks for $285 million. Whew. That's going to be like.
Well, let's put it this way. Franchises aren't going for less than $2 billion at this point, I don't think. So you heard Simmons say he thinks that the Suns are going to go for like 4.4.
Yeah.
That seems a little high, but I mean,
I feel like Simmons has a better beat on it than we do.
I would say that's probably accurate. Right. But that number seems high.
Yeah. All right. We'll get there when we talk Phoenix. So
okay.
The next Denver Nuggets. They added Bruce Brown and DeAndre Jordan via free agency. They added KCP and Ish Smith. They lost Will Barton, Bryn Forbes, Jamichael Green, Monte Morris, Austin Rivers. Obviously, this team is going to be different this year because Jamal Murray is going to come back. And I think they're better. They're going to be better this year. I don't know if DeAndre Jordan is the answer to the question, but as you like to say, if DeAndre Jordan is the answer to the question,
you don't want to know what the question is. You want to know what the question is.
But the over under is 49.5, and I'm hammering the over on this, Mike. I think this is an over for sure. Just because Jamal Murray's coming back, Jokic is, I mean, he played really well over in the Euro. Once again, I could go with my philosophy that he's going to come in out of shape, but I think he's actually going to be in shape. So I'm going over the 49.5. I'm guesstimating like 52, 53 wins for this Denver Nuggets team.
Yeah, this team, if it's healthy, is a legitimate NBA championship contender. If you get 95% of the Jamal Murray that you had before, if you get a healthy Michael Porter Jr., which I know is probably there's a 25% chance that that's what you're getting, Jokic is going to be Jokic. He's going to be right there at MVP level again this season. And he just makes everybody better. And he's such a unique player that I think the floor with Jokic, because he can make his teammates so much better with his passing and his ability to facilitate an offense, I think the floor for Denver is still really, really high. And then I like the Bruce Brown signing. I think you talk about Bruce Brown playing with Jokic and being able to screen and cut and go to the basket and Jokic being able to find him with passes. I think he's a valuable player, plus what he brings on the defensive end of the floor. And same thing with KCP, where you look at KCP and you're like, I'm not sure how exciting is he as a player, but won a championship with the Lakers. And if he could replicate his performance that he had when he was in Los Angeles, where he's knocking down threes, he's a versatile defender. You think about him replacing Will Barton. Will Barton might be a more, I don't even know if dynamic, but he could score in a wider variety of ways maybe than KCP, but KCP's a better shooter and clearly a better defender. And so I think he just fits. Then you talk about those four guys when you put Jokic, Murray, MPJ, and Aaron Gordon. That's a pretty good, solid core of four. You got Bones Highland, who they drafted last year, who's going to continue to develop, and they've put a lot of faith in him, and I think he's going to be an important part of their team. And I just think this team, if they're healthy, if all their parts are there, I'm not sure. And I've picked them, I've talked about the Nuggets for the last 2 years, how much I like them, and I've picked them to win championships at various points. So I'm not going to back off of that. I'm going over for the Denver Nuggets. A big bet on Jokic, and I think Murray's going to come back and be very, very close to what he was prior to the injury.
All right. Next, Golden State Warriors. They added Dante DiVincenzo, Jamichael Green. They drafted a bunch of guys that I don't think are going to really – I mean, I don't foresee them doing anything. They lost Bielitsa, who signed with some team in – I don't know where he signed. Is that Germany? For Venerbahce? I don't know where that's at. Chris Chioza, Damian Lee, Gary Payton, Otto Porter, Juan Toscano-Anderson. The over under this team's 51.5, and quite frankly, Mike, I think that's way too high. I'm going under. I think they lost. Like, I think Porter Jr. and Gary Payton II, while they're role players, I think they're huge assets to the team. They were huge in the finals run. Okay. And Dante DiVincenzo doesn't do anything for me, and Jamichael Green doesn't do anything for me. So I'm going under 51.5, Mike. I just don't feel good. Now, last year when I said they felt good about Golden State, I think I picked them in the finals against, or the Western Conference Finals against the Lakers. That might have been the one thing I picked right. But I just didn't, I don't see this team doing that as well this year. I think they're going to be the under 51.5.
So the things that you would argue for Golden State beating this over would be Klay, one more year removed from the two catastrophic injuries that he had. You got to figure that he's going to be better. Despite the fact that he's a year older, I think that gets offset by the distance from his injury. So I think you have a better version probably of Klay, and you have him all year and healthy. But I do think that this team, just like any other team that's been a contender for a long time, how motivated are they in the regular season? Does it matter to them how many wins they get in January or February or March? I don't think any of that matters to them. What ultimately matters is, are they healthy? Are they ready to go come playoff time? And I agree with you. I'm not sure that DiVincenzo, look, he has a skill set that feels like it would fit in pretty well in Golden State because he's good off the ball. He can move. He's sort of a sneaky rebounder, a good defender, guy that can do lots of different things. Feels like he would fit in well with them. But by the same token, you lost two guys who we know contributed to what Golden State did last year in Otto Porter Jr. and Gary Payton. So losing those two guys, clearly they were important players during the season last year. And so it remains to be seen whether DiVincenzo can replace that. And Jamichael Green's a serviceable big guy, but he's not moving the needle in terms of bringing them extra victories or causing them to have extra losses. So I think what you're looking at is the core of this team. How motivated are they in the regular season? You know this team is going to be good if they're healthy come playoff time. Nobody's going to want to play against Steph, and especially after what he did in the finals, getting his first finals MVP last June. So this team's going to be really good. They're going to be right there in title contention, but I'm going to agree with you and say that they are going to go under, mostly because I just think the regular season to them isn't going to mean a whole lot. And look, I'd say the first three teams that we've talked about, you look at that tier of teams that are going to be right around the 50-win mark, give or take two or three wins in each direction. I think Dallas, Golden State, and Denver are all probably in that category right there at the top of the Western Conference.
Yep. All right, the next pick, the next team, a first basement team that's not going to be a contender, the Houston Rockets. They added Sterling Brown, Trey Burke, Marquise Chris. How many teams has that guy been on? And Boban. They lost Trevellyn Queen, Dennis Schroeder, John Wall, and Christian Wood. I didn't know that Inez Freedom, a.k.a. is still on their team. Didn't know Anthony Lamb. Don't even know who Anthony Lamb is. This team's over-under is 23.5, Mike, and it feels really dirty for me to say this, but I think it's the under because this team does nothing for me. I mean, who knows? He might what's his name might throw soup on some guy. I've already forgotten him.
Kevin Porter Jr.
There you go. Yeah.
Too many Porter Juniors. That's our third Porter Jr. in this podcast. So,
and we're only like what in 20 minutes in.
The Porters are cranking out a lot of kids.
Just leave it at that.
So the Houston Rockets. There's four teams in the Western Conference that are more than likely not trying to win games. So you have the San Antonio Spurs, you have the Houston Rockets, you have the Oklahoma City Thunder, and you have the Utah Jazz. I would say clearly The Spurs are not trying to win games. Clearly, the Jazz are not trying to win games. Those are two teams that are full on. We've traded away our assets. We are not trying to win. Houston, on the other hand, you could maybe make a case for Jalen Green, Şengün. They're trying to build something. They may be within the confines of their roster. They may be trying to win games. And I put Oklahoma City sort of in that category too. Now, without Chet, it's a little bit different. But I don't think Houston and Oklahoma City are tanking as hard as San Antonio and Utah, if that makes any sense. And 23.5, man, I think there's so many good Western Conference teams at the top that it's hard to picture these bottom teams winning a lot of games. So part of me wants to say over for Houston, just not because I think they're great, but because I think that they're tanking less maybe than some of their counterparts there at the bottom of the Western Conference. But I'm going to go ahead and say under because this team is not going to be very good. So I'll go with you and go under on the Rockets.
Oh, yeah. That's what I like to hear. Okay. We don't need to talk about them anymore. All right. The L.A. Clippers, oh, baby, they added John Wall. They lost Isaiah Hartenstein and Jay Scrub. Never heard of that guy. He must be a scrub. Have you ever heard of Jay Scrub before, Mike?
Jay Scrub, great player. He's a scrub.
All right, the Clippers. Their over-under is way too high, in my opinion, 52.5. Here's why it's way too high. Even if Kawhi's back, he's not playing every game. Come on now. He's going to be in load management. Paul George, he's due for two-week injuries throughout the season. I don't see 52.5. Come on now. Like, there's no way. Under.
All right, so the Los Angeles Clippers, 52.5 is – that puts them at the very top of the Western Conference with the Phoenix Suns as far as teams that are favored to get the number one seed in the Western Conference. This team has a lot of depth. They have a lot of really good wing players that every team in the league is looking for guys – of which the Clippers have a whole bunch of guys that can do some of the things that many teams in the league are looking for. So that makes them pretty versatile. But I think your point is well taken that even if Kawhi is healthy, the maximum number of games you're probably getting out of him, even if he's completely 100% healthy and playing at his best, I think you're still probably only getting 55 to maybe max 60 games out of Kawhi. Paul George is dinged up, nicked up almost every single season. So the question then becomes, how many games are you getting with the full Clippers lineup together? And because this is the highest over-under in the Western Conference, I don't think that the Clippers are going to go over that. I'm going to go under as well on the Clippers, betting that either through load management or injury to one of their two key guys at some point during the season, that they are not going to be able to climb over that number.
All right, man. I don't like that we're agreeing on this so much, Mike.
We have a lot. There has been a lot of agreement. We've only disagreed on one thing, which was our first one, which was Dallas. We had a lot of disagreements in the East, but the West so far we're in lockstep, so maybe that will change as we go forward. Here.
The Los Angeles Lakers, they added all these wonderful players. Troy Brown Jr., never heard of him. Thomas Bryant.
Brown Jr., he was with the Wizards.
Well, there you go. That's why I didn't hear him. Jay Huff, Damian Jones, Dennis Schroeder, Juan Toscano-Anderson, Lonnie Walker IV. Man, Lonnie Walker... I had such high hopes for that guy. Not anymore.
Great hair.
They got Patrick Beverley, and the only person they lost is Malik Monk.
Well, they lost some other guys. They lost a few other guys.
Who else did they lose?
Well, let's just go through the list.
Well, Carmelo.
Trevor Ariza, DJ Augustine, Kent Bazemore, Avery Bradley, Sekou Diambuya, Wayne Ellington, Dwight Howard, Mac McClung, Mason Jones. So I'd say they lost a few people. Look, the Lakers,
their over-under is 45 and a half, Mike.
Okay. So I'm assuming, based on your glowing review of their roster, I'm assuming that you're going under.
I'm going to hit the over, Mike.
What? Oh, here's our chance to disagree. All right, give me the case for the over.
LeBron James. 40 games from Anthony Davis.
All you need is 40 games to go over?
No. I'm just going to – listen, something in my body tells me that they're going to go over. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to be a title contender, because they're not a title contender. I think Darvin Ham's going to do a good job. And I just, for some reason, think that it's over. I think
it is over.
I think it's over for this.
It's over for this version of the Lakers. It's over for this version of the Lakers.
And I don't think Russell Westbrook is going to be on this team by the come February. I think they're going to pull something out.
I mean, you would have to think not, but again, where is he going? I don't know what you're doing with him. And I know that they talked about on media day, I guess, that Pelinka was talking about that those, whatever, the 2027 and 2029 picks are on the table, that the Lakers would be willing to trade those to wherever to be able to improve the roster and contend around LeBron. It's just not enough. LeBron and AD surrounded by this cast of characters is not enough at this stage of LeBron's career. And with what we've seen from Anthony Davis over the last 2 years, I don't know if dominant Anthony Davis, is he still in there? I'm not confident that that's the case. There has been no passing of the torch from LeBron to AD, as was widely advertised when he came over from the Pelicans. I don't see it. LeBron, every year he's been in LA, he's had some injury that's caused him to miss at least 20 games. If LeBron misses 20 games, you can count on the Lakers' record being well below 500 in those 20 games. And so I think the combination of the specter of a LeBron injury, the fact of what the rest of this roster looks like, and the diminished impact of Anthony Davis leads me to say that the Lakers are going to be under. And that doesn't say anything with the chemistry with Westbrook and Beverly. And just they're sort of like the Nets East. There's a lot of combustible, weird personalities that could cause this to go in a direction that would not be very positive from a culture standpoint.
Okay. I accept your criticisms of this roster, but I just think that we're going to go over. They're due for a good season, Mike.
If those two guys are healthy and play to the best of their ability, there's a chance that they could go over, but I just don't see that happening. The best case scenario for the Lakers, they'd probably finish over. I just think the odds of that best case scenario are pretty slim.
All right, the next team we're going to look at is the Memphis Grizzlies. They gained Danny Green. It's crazy how long Danny Green's been in the league, Mike.
Danny Green's out, though. He's out with an injury. He's out for the season. He has a torn ACL, I believe.
Oh, well, he's got to retire. Come on now. He's been in the league for so long. Like, I don't know.
They haven't re-signed my guy Jarrett Culver, though.
No one signed him.
Jarrett Culver may be heading to Europe, unfortunately.
Yeah. They drafted a bunch of guys. They also lost Kyle Anderson, DeAnthony Melton, and Yves Pons. Whoever that guy is. Memphis Grizzlies, 48.5. That's a kind of a team that overachieved a little last year. Obviously, when Ja went down with his injury, you saw how important he was. His health is probably like the most important thing for that team, obviously. I have to imagine for me, 48.5 seems like a lot, but man, I don't know. I'm going to say slightly over, but not by a lot. Like I'm thinking 49 wins.
Okay. So the case for Memphis is I think this team is just, they're just tough. And it shows when they have Morant out that clearly most teams, you lose your superstar player for any length of time and you're going to go downhill. And Memphis clearly did not do that last year. Guys stepped up and they have a versatile roster that can defend. They have guys who can score. They just have tough-minded players, and that's led by Ja Morant. And at the same time, I think the fact that they're going to be missing Jaren Jackson Jr. at the beginning of the season for who knows how long. I know there's talk that he'd be back around Christmas time, but that's a long time to be missing your second, maybe your third best player, depending upon how you feel between him and Desmond Bane. But I feel like this last season, not that it was an aberration, because I think Memphis is good, and I think Memphis is going to be good again this year. But I think just by virtue of sort of what went on with the Clippers, the Nuggets, teams that we would normally expect to be right up there near the top of the standings, because of injury, those teams were not there. And that allowed Memphis to sort of step into that void. I think Memphis is going to go under this win total, still be very, very good. I expect Morant to continue to improve and get better. We're going to probably see an improved version of his shot this season. But I still expect Memphis to go under that 48.5. I think when you look at them and Dallas, to me, I have more confidence in Luka and the Mavericks going over that 48.5 than I do Memphis. So I'm going to go under on Memphis, and you're going to go over.
Yep. We're going to keep disagreeing, apparently. Let's keep it up.
All right.
All right, next up, the Minnesota Timberwolves. They added Kyle Anderson, CJ Elleby, Bryn Forbes, Luke Garza, Eric Pascal, Austin Rivers, Rudy Gobert. They lost Malik Beasley, Patrick Beverley, Leandro Balmaro, Josh Okogie, Jared Vanderbilt, and a bunch of guys that don't matter. Here's what I'm going to say. The over-under is also 48.5. Man, I can't believe I'm going to... I feel like this team's better, but they lost their heart and soul, Mike. Who's the heart and soul?
Patrick Beverley?
Patrick Beverley. I think he was the dog, man. Other than Anthony Edwards, he was the dog. He was the one that would just talk the trash, walk the walk. Man. I think they're probably in the same boat. I'm gonna do this. They're the same boat as Memphis. I think they're gonna get like around 49 wins. I'm gonna take the over because it's 48.5. I could be probably talked into the under, but I'm gonna go with the over there, Mike, as well.
Yes, it's gonna be the over. I think you're betting here on two things: the continued development of Anthony Edwards. I think Karl Anthony Towns is what he is at this point. And I know I said it all last spring that this team reaches their potential when Anthony Edwards becomes their best player. And I think this is probably the season where Anthony Edwards becomes their best player. And then secondly, I think you have Rudy Gobert, who in and of himself probably vaults your defense into for sure the top 10, probably the top 5. Just by himself. And again, we're talking regular season. We're not talking about playoffs. This is a team who is going to be hungry to win regular season games, unlike some of these other teams at the top who have been there before and who are just kind of gear up for the playoffs. The Timberwolves are going to be wanting to win regular season games. So for that reason, and the fact that I'm betting on the continued development of Anthony Edwards, I think the Timberwolves go over. You think about the three guys that we all talk about, right? You have Gobert, you have Towns, and you have Anthony Edwards. But don't forget, they also have D'Angelo Russell, who, say what you want about D'Angelo Russell, and he has his flaws and limitations, but he was a number two overall pick. He's a guy who's made an all-star team. He's a guy who can pass the ball and last season made strides, at least in the regular season. He was disappointing in that playoff series against Memphis, no question. But during the regular season, defensively, he made improvements. Offensively, he can pass the ball. He's not a guy who gets to the line very much, which I think is one of the big knocks against him. And he takes shots that you're not always that excited about. But as your third option on this team, I think he's a pretty good guy to have in that number four slot. So I like this team. And again, like I said, if you're betting the over, you're betting on Anthony Edwards continuing to develop into a guy who could be one of the 5 or 10 best players in the league. And that's a bet that at this point I'm willing to make. So over on the Minnesota Timberwolves.
All right. The New Orleans Pelicans, Mike Nelson. Mike, the goal is to not talk for 25 minutes on the New Orleans Pelicans, okay?
Okay. All right. All right. Okay. All right.
They added no one in free agency. They added no one in trade. They drafted three players, Dyson Daniels, E.J. Liddell, Carlo Matkovic, but Liddell's out for the season, right?
Yes.
I feel like he's out for the year.
Torn ACL.
In Summer League. But obviously, the big thing is they got Zion back. They just extended C.J. McCollum for 2 more years. 2 years, $64 million. Is that accurate? I think that's what that was.
Yeah, that adds on to...
to the end. Yeah, it's an extension.
He has four seasons now.
Yeah.
4 seasons.
Yeah. We're not talking about a hotel here, Mike. Come on.
Correct. We're not talking about a hotel. We're talking about 4 more seasons of C.J. McCollum. I'm not sure what that looks like in year four, but... in year one of that contract, it looks pretty solid.
A 2-year, $64 million extension. It'll take him through 25-26. New deal ties C.J. McCollum to the Pels for 4 years and $133 million. So they're over-under 44.5, Mike. And this, to me, it could be a boom or it could be a bust. And it's all dependent on your guy. And whether he's able to play. Now, I will say, he looks like he's actually in some kind of shape right now. Like,
you see the side-by-side pictures of him from last year to this year? Oh, man.
It's like James Harden going from Houston to Brooklyn or in Philly.
I don't think there was a fat suit involved in this case.
No, there was some fat for sure.
Yeah, there was some fat, but not a fat suit.
So the question that we have to ask ourselves, Mike, is once again, he won the press conference. The Cleveland Browns have been doing that for years, winning the press conference, although they're not this year. Deshaun Watson was not winning the press conference. But Zion winning the press conference, when we won't know until we see him on the floor. We won't know until we're 3 weeks into the season whether he's still healthy. We won't know these things. Are you willing to go over on this, banking on the fact that he's going to be able to play? Or do you just feel even if he doesn't play, they can win 45 games?
That's a great question. I think that's the point that I was going to make is you look at what this team did last year in the playoffs and pushing Phoenix the way they did when no one really saw that coming. And you look at the development of Herb Jones. You look at the development of Jose Alvarado. You look at what could potentially be Jackson Hayes continuing to improve. Brandon Ingram raised his level of play in the playoffs. I think this team, even without Zion, that 44.5 number would make me, I'd stare at that for a long time. And I'd seriously consider taking the over. And then you add Zion into this mix. To me, if Zion is, and look, saying if Zion's healthy is a huge if based on what we've seen to this point in his career. But I think this team's probably good enough to get to that number even without Zion. So if you add Zion for 60 games to this team, I think this is a team that could be a very good regular season team. And I definitely think that come Western Conference playoffs time, there's going to be a lot of the top 3-4 seeds that are going to be looking down the standings going, where are the Pelicans? Because we do not want to have anything to do with trying to deal with Zion in the playoffs and play against this team. I think they have a lot of different ways they can play. There's a lot of different things that they can do positionally. I really like this team. I like them even without Zion. And then you throw Zion into the mix, especially a Zion who's in shape. And, you know, his one quote was, boy, I'm doing things on the court that I didn't really even know I could do before. And if that's really true, and athletically he's back to sort of where he was, I feel like he was almost at his peak athletically when he was at Duke. I mean, if he gets back to that level of athleticism and what we saw him doing, the guy's been historically great. I've said it, you've said it numerous times. When he's been on the floor, he's been a historically great player. He's put up stat lines and done things that very, very few players in the history of the game have been able to do. And if that guy's on the floor and he's in the best shape of his career and he starts to figure out that not only do I have to contribute offensively, but I have to contribute defensively, and who knows if he'll get there. But if he does, the ceiling on this team is way, way higher than 44.5. So I'll clearly take the over on this one.
All right. I'm going to be the negative Nancy over here. I'm taking the under, Mike.
All right.
I'm banking on
you're a Zion pessimist.
I am. Listen, I'm taking the under. Okay. That's New Orleans. All right. The next team, the Oklahoma City Thunder. They added Maurice Harkless. They added this guy named Chet Holmgren, who's out for the season. They drafted a few other guys. They lost Jermichael Green, Isaiah Roby. No one else that matters. This team's terrible. Their opener is 23.5. They're in the same position as those other bottom teams. I don't think they have no reason to win, Mike, because they're not going to win. So I'm going the under.
Yeah, I think as soon as Chet went down, I think you start looking at the under. The big question with this team at this point, I think there's two things that you're looking at with this team that are interesting, neither of which really involves winning this season. One, I think, is the development of Josh Giddey, where what's he going to become? What's the best version of Giddey? Can he improve his shot enough where it can unlock even more of his playmaking? He's clearly a guy who has a great feel, and he's going to be a really good player in this league for a long time. But can he unlock the shooting and become a little bit better scorer, which could maybe allow him to jump up a level? So I think that's what, if you're an Oklahoma City Thunder fan, that's probably what you're watching for this season. And then I think the second piece is, at what point does Shai Gilgeous-Alexander look around and go, guys, how many times do I have to get shut down in the last 20 games of the season so we can lose? And just losing year after year after year after year after year, I would think that would get old. And so the question becomes, does Sam Presti and the Thunder, is Shai still in their plans? Is he not in their plans? How's Shai feel about this whole situation? So those are the two things that I would watch, is the development of Giddey, and then where are they with Gilgeous-Alexander? Easy for me to say. Gilgeous-Alexander. Where are they
with him? Just say SGA, Mike. Come on.
SGA. Where are they with him in terms of, does he want to be there? Do they feel like they could trade him and get more value, more picks that fit better with the Giddey Holmgren timeline? I don't know. Clearly, this team was going to try to win games this year, signing Dort. And if you brought in Chet, I think that they were going to try for the first time in years to start winning games. And the Chet injury just sets them back a whole nother year. So I think they might as well try to throw their hat into the ring and see if they can't get in the Victor Wembanyama sweepstakes. So I'm with you. I think the Thunder are going to go under. The Western Conference at the top.
Boom or bust, baby.
Yeah. And like we talked about with the Eastern Conference, there's really, you know, I think Orlando and Detroit have both moved out of the tankathon. And so those teams are going to be trying to win. So there's games that are going to be a lot more difficult than they've been in the past. By the way, my guy Fultz, you saw he's out, right?
Well, no. What did he do now?
I want to say it was a foot or a toe.
Oh my God. That guy's made of glass. God bless America.
Yeah. He's going to miss the beginning of the, he's going to be miss the beginning of the season.
It's over under 20 games for him this season, Mike.
I think over, but I think I'm not 100% certain that that's going to, fractured left toe.
Oh, forget it. He's gonna have a hangnail next week too.
Come on, man. Fractured left toe. No surgery required. Placed in a walking boot, and they're gonna see how he responds to rehabilitation and treatment. And who knows? So he should be back
under
at some point,
20 games. Under 20 games, Mike.
All right. All right. Well, anyway, the Thunder. We're both agreeing that they are going under.
The Phoenix Suns, they added Damian Lee, Josh Okogie, and Dwayne Johnson. They drafted a guy named Jock. They lost Aaron Holiday, JaVale McGee, Frank Kaminsky, Elfrid Payton. Here's the thing, Mike. What they haven't gained is trust between the Sarver nonsense and getting suspended for the year, and now he's selling the team, and they've started the process. Who knows what that means? Who knows how long that situation is going to happen? Okay. You've got today at the first, you know, the media day / first day of training camp, DeAndre Ayton saying that he hasn't talked to Monty Williams since the season ended. And Monty Williams' response was, well, I haven't talked to a few of the guys. I just thought they could just use a rest from it. This does not seem good, Mike. This is not good. And their over-under for the Phoenix Suns is 52.5. I'm hammering that under, baby, because this is not going to go well. Under, under, under.
That's an under. I think that there's no question that this team has some issues to work through. As you mentioned, when you're former number one draft pick and your coach do not speak after what was a disastrous game 7 at home against Dallas last spring, you have to be able to have some communication and talk that through and try to figure it out. And the fact that Ayton's contract situation went on throughout the summer is a little worrisome. You have Jay Crowder now coming out and saying he wants to be traded, because it seems likely that Cam Johnson is going to take his starting position. So you have that whole piece of it. I don't know if you listened to any of the, I think it was the Windhurst podcast today. They were talking about basically that the Phoenix Suns media day was just a disaster, that no one looked happy. There was no smiles. And clearly the Sarver thing is weighing on them. But also you have this team that most people thought going into the playoffs last year that they were the prohibitive favorite to at least make it to the NBA Finals, if not win the whole thing. And the fact that they imploded at home in that game 7 against Luka and the Mavericks, that's something that can make or break a team. It could theoretically bring them together and galvanize them to try to win a title this year, or it could go the opposite way, and that's just something that breaks you that you can't recover from. Kind of like the Clippers when they had that big fourth quarter loss from ahead against the Houston Rockets. And they just, that Chris Paul, Lob City, Blake Griffin team just never recovered from that. And when I look at the Phoenix Suns, that's what I see. I see a team that has good individual pieces. I see a team, though, that last year they went 64 games. How motivated are they going to be to win games in the regular season. I'm not sure. I just think that this team, that's something that you just don't recover from. And especially when you hear some of the things that have gone on internally with the lack of communication, a team that's together, a team that's going to right the ship and come together is not a team that just pushes that under the rug and doesn't talk to anybody for 5 months. That to me is crazy. And the fact that that's really what's going on, I think it's a complete under. And that's not to say even with the Sarver stuff hanging around, and who knows how that affects the players on a day-to-day basis. You wouldn't think it would have a tremendous amount of effect on them day-to-day. But at the same time, that's the guy who's signing your checks. And it has to have some effect. And it just – Phoenix just seems like an unhappy place to be right now if you're a member of the Phoenix Suns. So I'm going to go under on the Phoenix Suns.
All right. We're in agreement. Portland Trailblazers, they added Gary Payton II. They added Jeremy Grant. They lost Bledsoe. Ingles never played for them. Zeller, Norvell Pell, yes. These guys, Dennis Smith Jr., Ben McLemore. Listen, the Portland Trailblazers, they're over-under 39.5. They're not going to be a good team. But they're going to be better than the bottom barrel teams. I think this team is a play-in team situation, Mike. More than likely. So I'm going to say they're a play-in candidate, but they're going to go under 39.5.
This is a tough one because I think the way the West shapes up, there are, I would say in my estimation, probably 8 teams that I feel pretty confident are going to be the playoff teams or the teams that are going to be in that top 6 and then the top 2 teams in the play. And then I think you have 9 and 10 where I guess I would probably slot the Lakers and Portland into those 9 and 10 slots in the play-in. And my question with Portland is, what version of Damian Lillard are you getting? Are you getting the normal version of Damian Lillard? Is his abdominal injury from last year still having an impact? Are you going to get a lesser version of him as he ages? I don't know the answer to that question. I think Jeremy Grant is a good pickup. Gary Payton is a good pickup. I think both of those guys are going to help. I think what they lost, I'm not sure that anything that walked out the door really hurt them. To me, it just comes down to the West is really, really loaded. What version of Damian Lillard am I getting? And I don't know. I think 39.5, I'm going to go over on Portland, where maybe they get to 40 wins, counting on a healthy Dame and counting on the fact that there's a lot of easy wins sitting at the bottom of the Western Conference, enough to get this team to 40 wins.
Okay. Fair points. I was hemming and hawing on whether they could just barely go over, but I'm not. Sacramento Kings? Oh, I didn't know they added Matt Delly. Oh, that's exciting. He's back in the league? Oh, that's exciting, Mike. I just saw that. I want to go over just because of that.
It's always good to see Delly in the league.
They added Malik Monk, Sam Merrill, Kevin Huerter. They lost DiVincenzo, Harkless, Holiday, Josh Jackson, Damian Jones, and Jeremy Lamb are the, I won't say big names. They're over-under 33.5.
So here's the case for Sacramento. There's 4 teams below them that they are clearly going to finish better than. There's no way, unless this team gets decimated by injuries, there's no way they're finishing lower than the Spurs, Thunder, the Jazz, and the Rockets. So Spurs, Rockets, Thunder, Jazz. They're not going to finish worse than those 4 teams. They're just not. And so you're looking at, that means that they are at worst, I think, 11th in the Western Conference. And then you look at their lineup and you say, okay, De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis, Keegan Murray, who looked good in summer league, That's a guy who's going to be an important player. You have Harrison Barnes there. You've got Kevin Herter there. Like that lineup of Herter, Fox, Sabonis, Murray, Harrison Barnes, like those are five legitimate good NBA players. Not necessarily maybe great, but those are five good NBA players. And to have this team sitting at 33.5, I mean, clearly you're betting on the pedigree of Sacramento and the stink of Sacramento, that they're just not going to be very good. But that team of five guys makes sense. I think offensively, it can be really good. I'm not sure what they are defensively, but this team is trying to win, unlike the four teams below them. And I think that there's some question marks about the teams that are right ahead of them in the standings. So when I think about Portland or I think about the Lakers, now, I don't know. I think the number for them is low. I think 33.5 is a low number for Sacramento, because I do think that they're clearly going to not finish in that bottom tier. And so I think that there's enough wins sitting around there at the bottom of the Western Conference that, just like I said with Portland, I think Sacramento, because they're trying to win, and because I think they have a competent starting five, I'm going to say Sacramento is going to go over that win total.
All right, two teams left. We're going to move to the San Antonio Spurs. They added Gorgui Dieng, Isaiah Roby. They lost Gallinari because they waived him. They really didn't have him ever. They lost DeJounte Murray. They lost Jock Landale. They lost Lonnie Walker. This team's going to be bad. I just don't understand why Greg Popovich is still hanging around, but whatever, Pop. It's the under.
How many wins is Greg Popovich worth?
Five.
So that means this is like a 15-win team. Pop is the only thing that makes you look at this twice and think, can Greg Popovich will this team to more than 22 wins? Can he get them to 23 wins?
No.
I'm sorry, Pop. I don't think you can. I think looking at this roster, I don't see it. I don't see how this team can possibly get to 23 wins. I just don't see it. So I'm going to go under with you. Give me the under.
Speaking of teams that I can't see it, the last team we have to talk about, the Utah Jazz. Over-under is 24.5. They added Ochai, Ogbaji, Malik Beasley, Balmaro, Talen Horton-Tucker, Stanley Johnson, Saben Lee, Lauri Markkanen, Kelly Olynyk, Colin Sexton, Jared Vanderbilt. They lost a whole lot of people. Mitchell, Bogdanovich, Beverly. Because the Bogdanovich trade happened recently. I don't think we talked about that at all.
No, we haven't.
But here's the bottom line. Utah's not trying to win here. Danny Ainge is stockpiling. We've seen the Colin Sexton when he's – I mean, is Colin Sexton the best player on that team now?
Yes.
Yeah. So we've seen this show before. He's going to put up really good numbers, theoretically, if he's healthy. I wish him the best of luck. But I just don't see this team. Their over-under is 24.5.
Under.
I think it's an under.
Okay, here's a better question. The Jazz win total versus Colin Sexton's points per game. Which one's higher?
I like that.
Which one's higher?
Colin Sexton's point per game, for sure.
Can Sexton average 25 a game if he's healthy this year for Utah?
Yeah.
I think so. I think he's going to be, A, motivated, and B, he's going to have lots of opportunity to be able to do stuff on this team. And Utah clearly, organizationally, wants to lose games. Clearly. So this team to be have the fifth lowest win total, I think clearly they're going to be under. I don't see this team.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't see this team fighting their way to get guys out on the floor to win games. I just think that organizationally, they're going to rest guys. They're going to make decisions that are going to handcuff the coaches and players in terms of winning games. I think the organization is going to make it difficult for this team to have much success this year out on the floor. So I would anticipate that Utah is going to be right there at the bottom, which again necessitates going under on the Utah Jazz. Yeah.
We've done it, Mike.
We've done it. We've gone through every team, Eastern Conference, Western Conference. We will start to formulate our preview episodes, although we did talk in many ways about some of the things that we will reiterate again when we talk about our previews. But we'll talk more about where exactly we feel like these teams are going to fit and talk about playoff predictions and different things as we get into our previews over the next couple of weeks.
So we have, Mike, you know we have 3 weeks until the season starts.
Yeah, it's coming quick.
Very quick. I have on my back dry erase board, I have three things written on there right now. It said Guardians magic number. Well, Nets is zero, and I put stars there. So AL Central champions. It says Browns 2-1. And it says 20, I think it was 23 days or 22 days until the first game for the Cavs. So it's a countdown.
Exciting times to be a Cleveland fan.
For sure, for sure. I don't know if we really want to spend a lot of time on this, but Browns beat the Steelers, Mike. Your thoughts?
Best game you have to win. The Steelers are terrible. Their quarterbacking situation is, let's just say, not good.
Would you have taken Baker Mayfield over Mitchell Trubisky? If you say no, I'm going to throw this microphone across the room.
I think I would take Baker over Trubisky, but that's not saying a whole lot. So,
Look,
the Browns did what they had to do and won that game. I think the disappointment is, it's tempered by the fact that you should have beat the Jets the week before. You should be sitting at 3-0, and that's not to say that the Browns are some great team, because they're not at this point. But 3-0 would look really good, and that's what they, in all honesty, should be without just completely collapsing against the Jets. So, and then you're looking at the Falcons, which is a clearly winnable game, where you could be 4-0, and now you're only 7 games away from getting Deshaun Watson back.
And your best defensive player got in a car accident. So
right,
there you go.
Which who knows whether or not he's going to play this weekend.
But at least he's okay.
Yeah, he's okay. I mean, when you flip your car over and you have like a shoulder contusion and a potential bicep injury and some cuts on your hand, not to minimize it, but man, when your car flips over and you get to walk away from it, you got to feel pretty good about that. So thankful that Myles Garrett is okay. I would expect that this game against Atlanta is going to be a game that's going to go right down to the wire, and who knows? I won't be surprised.
From the Browns?
I won't be surprised if they win, but I will not be at all stunned if the Browns go down to Atlanta and end up losing some kind of weird, goofy game that they probably shouldn't lose.
But do you know what? The game is played and that brand new Atlanta stadium, the NFL. Do you know what they have in that brand new NFL stadium in Atlanta?
What?
They have a Chick-fil-A.
All right. Well, there you go.
That makes a lot of sense, right?
Does
they're not even open on Sundays.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Interesting. So that makes it a little tough. Atlanta better schedule a lot of Thursday and Monday night games. They better get good so they can have some marquee games.
My friend from high school lives down there, has gone to 3 games, and if the Chick-fil-A that's in there is not open for any of the games.
Yeah, that's not.
It's pretty comical, right?
Yeah, that's not good. That's not the best, I guess, planning on either side's part. But hey, what do I know? I'm not a businessman at Chick-fil-A, so I'm not a franchisee. So that's the way it goes.
All right. Anything else, Mike?
Nah, I think we're done. Let's wrap it up there. Again, thanks to everybody out there for listening and checking out our Western Conference over-under. Please make sure you continue to listen to the Hoopettes Pod. We are on track, Jay, just so you know, for our best month ever. In terms of downloads, we will probably pass our all-time number per month, probably before today is out. So we are recording. It's 11:54 on Tuesday, and we were just about on the precipice of passing it. But our previous high was 24,000 and something, and when I checked a little bit earlier, we were right at 23,950 something. So clearly in the next 3 days, we're going to pass that. Hopefully probably go by 25 or 26,000 downloads this month. So that is fun. That's exciting. We appreciate everybody out there listening. So make sure you continue to check out our weekly interview episodes. And thanks for sticking with us with these NBA episodes. Jason and I have a lot of fun doing these together, and we hope you enjoy listening to them. So appreciate it. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more. Three-hour basketball powered by Under Armour is coming to Cleveland this fall. Get your 3-on-3 team together and register at ua3rbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.